ahead and call our council meeting. Let's see, this is Tuesday, April 17, 2018. We are starting at 7:09 PM and meeting in the Sevierville Community Center. We are going to start with a pledge given by Scout Anthony Ganji, and then the invocation will be given by Councilmember Ellsworth.
Will the audience please rise?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, Heavenly Father, we are grateful for this opportunity to meet with the City Council and those community members. Bless us with thy spirit, bless us with the ability to make choices and have discussions that will benefit the people that we represent. We pray for these things in your Son, Jesus Christ, amen.
Amen. Moving on to item number two, I need an approval of the meeting's agenda.
I move that we approve the agenda for Tuesday, April 17, 2018.
I have a motion made by Councilmember Miller. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Ellsworth. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes, and we will move on to item three, which is public comment. Do we have the sign-up sheet? Okay. So, Mr. Babb, you have two options. You can either speak now during the public comment portion, or you can wait until we get speaking on that particular item to speak right before the public preference. Okay. Looks like no one else has signed up. Is there anybody else here who wanted to make public comments? Now we'll go ahead and close that portion of the meeting and move on to the consent agenda. So the consent agenda are minutes from the March 6, 2018 and the March 21st, 2018 work session and city council meetings. Do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, or does anyone have changes that they want to make to any of those minutes?
I've read the minutes and I would like to make a motion that we approve the consent agenda.
I have a motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Councilmember Geddes. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. We'll move on to item number five, which is city reports by city manager. So, Mr. Goodwin.
Ernie's and the golf course are now open, so pending the weather in the golf course. But so we encourage people to come out and patronize both of those locations. Our PI has been energized. However, it is really early in the season, and we had snow this morning, so we're asking people to maybe lay off using your sprinklers quite yet. Canyon Road project has begun. If you haven't driven down Canyon Road, you should do it sometime. It's quite the experience. But any questions should be directed to Utah County, as it's their project. In the recreation department, soccer has started. Teen soccer started last night. Tot soccer has been delayed due to weather. The numbers have increased, except for teen, but the tot soccer program is maxed out due to limited field space. So that's a good thing that we're getting that much participation. The theater program wrapped up their latest production. I believe it was Mary Poppins last night. And the summer series will begin soon. Lacrosse registration and T-ball and coach pitch registration are open as well. And with lacrosse, we're testing that program for another year to see if the numbers sustain or merit maintaining that program. So we'll be keeping an eye on that one. That's all I have.
Thank you, Councilmember Anderson. Councilmember Geddes?
I'll let you report
on the meeting.
Okay.
And we are actually going to talk about it anyway, item number 10 on our agenda, so I'll just wait till we get to that point because it was a longer budget. I also, you guys have my update that I emailed out and everything that we were to talk was on the agenda, so I will wait for those items. Councilmember Ellsworth. Councilmember Miller.
This, the beautification committee will be holding the soil seminar this Saturday at 21st and 10 a.m. at the Hall Schedule. The last event that the it was well attended, so hopefully we can get that feedback tonight.
All right, thank you. So we will move on to our scheduled items, the first being a review action on a resolution regulating the fireworks, and Mr. Goodwin is presenting.
So there may be some, let me actually pull up that map in just one second. Screen there, but you get the idea that there are certain areas within our city that we view that are sensitive and more prone to break out fires, people light fireworks or areas. They're highlighted in orange on the map, burnt orange. Last year in the June council meeting, we held a special council meeting where the city council adopted this map by ordinance, and the map states that fireworks and areas are not permitted within 100 feet of the highlighted areas. However, the ordinance states that it shall be unlawful to discharge or ignite an aerial device as defined by Utah Administrative Code R710-2-3 in any area as identified by the highlighted areas of the map, which by this reference is made part of the subsection. So we've got a bit of a contradiction we've got to work out tonight. Is the map says the fireworks and aerials, and the code says just aerials. So if you, as you look at the map, I've said this to Chief Thompson, and he gave me some good feedback. He stated that we wouldn't want to spread the word of the map, make sure that people are aware that these are the restrictions and they're in place through social media, through the city's website, as many avenues as we can. We want to put out signs, which we do every year, and Lone Peak Fire has been really gracious to put out signs. Currently, our map only designates 100 feet from certain waterways, but we can, based on the new state code that's passed, increase that up to 200 feet. And then the city will work with American Fort Police on the actual enforcement of the measures. The reason this is on the agenda tonight is that the most recent legislation that was passed requires cities to adopt a map by May 1st. Well, we've already adopted a map, but with a contradiction, with any clarity that needed to be added, we wanted to have this on the agenda tonight so that if any changes needed to be made, we can make those like that May 1st deadline. So, having looked at the map, what suggestions, what feedback can we take back while we adopt this map tonight?
So, if I remember right from that meeting, last year, we had focused on the fact that some of the ground fireworks are mobile, and that's something that can't be managed very well. That's why that was put in there. Those way around empty lots, etc. I still feel that's a good idea. Just don't know where those are going.
Yeah. So the ordinance says non-stationary ground flower type fireworks. So it did allow fireworks that on the east side that were stationary and non aerial.
Yeah. It was the little twirling things.
Yeah,
it was
the ground loss of the flowers.
That caused another spin in those all different directions.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still okay excluding those, but I know just the ground loss.
Yeah, I agree.
Sounds like I'll leave
the ground. Right. And then right now it does say that they're not allowed within 100 feet of an undeveloped lot. Do you want to extend that to the 200 feet? Do you want to keep it at 100 feet? I don't know if Chief Thompson has a recommendation on that.
Yeah,
so a lot of your aerial fireworks that are allowed, they're allowed to be purchased in the... They're allowed to be purchased in the state, then they're illegal to use in the state. A lot of the fallout zones on that are about 125 to 150 feet. So I think that's why you saw the legislation change this year to a 200-foot rule that's acceptable for waterways, dry grass, or dry brush, mountainous areas, wildland, urban
face that we're specifically calling out on 200 foot side.
Okay.
And so that would be my recommendation.
Okay, that makes sense. I agree with that, 200 feet seems reasonable. And then, of course, I'm sure everyone's aware that the state reduced the number of days that you can light fireworks to 2 days before and 1 day after the holidays in July.
Do we allow fireworks around Chinese New Year?
We do.
Yes.
New Year's Eve and Chinese New Year, yes. Any other questions or feedback for Trevor as he puts this together?
One thing I would just add. Yeah, this comes up every year. You see, obviously, on the east side of Tennessee, you can identify that as a sensitive area because of the slopes, given the nature of fires on the Buffalo side. But on the west side, Canyon Road, throughout the city, you'll see a number of orange. Most of those are either undeveloped property, such as the Smart property, the city's 9 acres, or also find that they're in public facilities, other schools, their parks, their trails. We're not allowing discharge of fireworks of any form in city parks or anywhere in public facilities.
All right, if there are no further questions, I will take a motion. This is a resolution.
We're making a change to 200 feet?
Yes.
I'm going to add language that you talked about stationary fireworks, or okay, we'll carve that out when that language will come.
Yeah.
Before they make that motion, Chandler, last year when we did this, it was an ordinance.
It is an ordinance.
Okay.
And that's what the code comes from. It's 5-2-10.
So where it says review action on an ordinance, but the bottom it says approve a resolution. Does it need to be approved in an ordinance?
It is ordinance.
Okay.
Took that. I think last year we called it a resolution. It is an ordinance.
Okay. So it'll be.
So is it dash A? Or
yes.
Okay. Yeah, you go ahead, Matt.
Okay. I recommend that we approve resolution number.
Ordinance.
Or an ordinance number, 4-16-17. 17-2018-A, affirming support for firework restrictions that were approved in 2007, subject to the following modifications, which would include no non-stationary fireworks and any aerials up to 200 feet from areas identified on the map.
All right,
I
have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
So motion made by Councilmember Bittes, seconded by Councilmember Anderson. Councilmember Bell.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Bittes.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously. We'll move on to item number 8, which is this discussion on the pedestrian use of the golf course. I do have a resident who would like to make public comments. Mr. Pat, if you want to come on up, we will have 3 minutes, and you can start by giving us your name and address.
Bill Pat, I'm with MIT. I've been here 20 years, I moved here when I retired from the Navy, and I'm a captain of Southwest Airlines. I may be the only person who wants to use the golf course path, mostly over here on Canyon Road, because crossing various streets, it just doesn't make sense when there's nobody on the golf hole. My job along at home, I've been stopped a couple of times. They say, get off the golf course, get off the path, we own this land, you're trespassing. I say, okay, not very nicely. But as I came up here tonight, there were two people walking up Canyon Road. There was no walking path. They were along a section with no sidewalk. As I walked down the walking path along the ninth hole on Sunday morning at 11 o'clock, I watched one of our fine golfers in yellow pants urinate in the bushes adjoining the walking path. So there's issues of their own. Let's make a decision as a city as to where we want to be and what we want to do. Is the golf course self-supporting in both the bond and revenues? Am I wrong in this?
No.
It's not. Okay. Then in the long term for our city, as I said in my little letter, what do we want to be known for? Golf course? Or hyper fitness center? My wife has to go to Pleasant Grove. They walk every day, they go to Pleasant Grove Fitness Center. We don't have one. We're going to grow. Look at the composition of the council. You're growing. All the millennials are going to move up. Okay? This ground is worth a lot of money. I love the open space developments. I love the recreation opportunity for certain people, but it doesn't serve our community. It serves people from outside the community. What percentage of golfers, this should be my mind, are from Cedarville and live in Cedarville?
Sorry, actually,
I don't think we're trying
to. Maybe we should. Something to compare. How many people on a given day walk the paths? I can tell you. A lot. Okay? Hundreds, probably. Okay. I don't know if it's hundreds, but it's a lot. So I only would submit to you that in the long term for financial health of our community, if we want to look at subdividing the golf course, ask the builders in our community if they would offer us up walking trails and biking paths and things that we need in our community, and space for churches, schools, and the other things. And I think you'd find they agree. What would the tax base be? Fairly large, maybe. Would it cover the bond? Most assuredly. Okay. No, it wouldn't. Okay. We looked at it.
Yeah, I would just suggest you go to the golf course report that you 2 years ago and just read it. You'll understand a lot.
Well, I looked at what they put forward today, which is going to follow this, and it looks kind of like a grab for power, and I appreciate that. They need to manage that. But what it is risk management. It's what I do on a daily basis, okay? Which is the greater risk? There's no golf on the hole, I'm walking down the path. What's the problem? Is it the risk of me getting hit by a golf ball by a non-existent golfer? How about the car going down the highway when there is a golfer and they slice the ball? No. They hook the ball and it hits them in the windshield and kills a family of five. Now, what's your liability? Immense?
Thank you, Mr. Patton, for the 3 minutes. Thank you. All right, so we will move to the line item, which is discussion on the pedestrians of the golf course. Presenters will be Mr. Goodwin, Mr. Gordon, and Mr. Doyle.
And Mr. Cloud.
And Mr. Clark. Sorry, that's all
I apologize, Brian.
I thought somebody went out of presenting.
I appreciate Wade and Brian taking time out of their evening to be here as well. That's good that they're here. I asked staff to put together a golf course rules and policies. We have a policies and procedures manual that is internal to the city. It dictates staff's actions, it dictates behaviors. How we run the city outside of city code. But we want something for the golf course specifically because the questions routinely come up and that we have to answer for. And the golf course policies and procedures, the golf course rules and policies is really for patrons of the golf course, people that use the golf course, not necessarily just for staff. This is just a discussion item, but the last portion of the document that's been provided to, it says nature trails. It says there are walking and biking trails running through the golf course. Anyone on the golf course other than paid players of the golf course is trespassing violators or will be prosecuted. So here's a map. It's kind of hard to see. I apologize that the light hitting it. It's just not an easy map to see. You can just see an aerial here. But this is, we're in this building right here. This is overlooking hole one right here. So this is down in the river bottom down here. This is holes 1 through 8. As you come up here, there is a walking trail. There's a walking, jogging bike path that runs right through here. There's also another one that runs right through here. It connects out to the highway. This one connects, wraps around as you go around hole 10. It connects from the outer cross and goes back up the hillside. So we do have some walking and biking trails that are on the course, that are run through the course. If I were to disseminate the concerns of staff when it comes to the golf course, walking specifically, walking pedestrian use of the golf course, I would say it boils down to two concerns. It's liability and it's damage to the golf course. I checked out a study that was conducted that looked at 147 cases of golf-related injuries. And of those 147 cases, the leading cause of injury, 45% of the time it was a golf ball hitting somebody, and 27% of the time it was a slip, trip, or a fall. So, as we're talking about pedestrian use of the golf course, this is two issues that that could cause additional liability to the city as injuries could occur. The injury site where the golf course accidents occur, the number one place was the golf course path at 13%. And number two on the fairway at 11.6%. The plaintiff in these cases, 72% of the time, it was actually a golfer that was filing a lawsuit. So even though we're trying to minimize our liability, we're not eliminating it. And then in the other 18.4%, it was a non-golfer. So it, by adding more non-golfers, I feel like you're increasing your liability on that end as well. And the plaintiff's claims, 85% of the time, their claims were negligent against the golf course. In the outcome of such cases, 52% of the time the golf course won, 30% of the time the golf course lost, and 18% of the time the fan went back to a different court for additional information. I thought that information was very applicable. It was very interesting in that even though we try to mitigate the risk, we do not eliminate it. We always carry risk as running the golf course. As a city, we are open to lawsuit at any time for any reason. But with that, we do want to establish a set of written policies that dictate how the course is used and who can use the course, because we are concerned. Now, on the vandalism aspect, we do have people that walk on the course, and I know that in many instances, Brian can vouch for this or deny this or say whatever he wants, but there's been a number of times that there's ropes that designate the range where you can't drive your car past, and someone will come through with a knife and will slice those ropes. Additionally, the greens, the tee boxes, they're very sensitive areas, they're very sensitive grass areas. And people that run over them, running cleats or running shoes, really do damage to those greens. It's a very sensitive area. As well as on a number of occasions, we've found gifts that people have deposited in the cups in the morning. People have taken the flags, they've tossed them into the lawns. Golf course vandalism is not a new one, it's not gonna go away. This last year, we had a number of instances where people stole range balls from us, from Tri-Cities, or Fox Hollow, took them up to our hillside, or glow stick liquid, or glow sticks, poured them on. The golf balls and hit them off the greens off of hole 13, which the liquid from the glow sticks actually burned through the grass, killed the grass, causing actually thousands of dollars worth of damage. We actually caught those kids, and so we're working with the prosecutor on coming to terms with that. But nonetheless, vandalism is a concern, of course, as well as like a liability. So with that, this was staff's recommendation to council. With that being said, we always value the input that the city council provides to staff. We will give our best recommendation on whatever issue you may be discussing. But in the end, ultimately, we feel like the decision is the city council's. We will follow the direction the city council provides to staff.
Thank you. Is there anything else that Mr. Gordon or
sorry, it was in your face. The only thing I would add, and I don't know, did you send the one that way, just the updated one that you sent you this morning? The only addition we did was to try to help us with damage building. As Mr. Patton said, Cottonwood and Canyon Road, we've added that in there too, that the golfers are liable for that. Even though it's on scorecards, we've got it posted all over the place, but we've added that to this as well.
Okay. So council, the reason why this is on the agenda as a discussion item is this question has come up multiple times over the years, and we haven't had a written policy on how we're, if we want to allow pedestrians to use the golf course trails, if we want to prohibit it. So staff really needs a direction from the council on how you wanted to move forward with this particular item. We have discussed, it was actually Mr. Wright who brought up an option that Tim Cave uses where users who want to walk up to the cave but don't actually pay to get in the cave, they have to get a pass where they sign off that they understand the rules and have to comply with those rules. But there was still some concern with who's going to monitor that and the damage that can still come to the golf course if people are walking on the green. So at this point, we need feedback from council on how we would like to proceed.
So this nature trail language, is this new? This isn't in the policy before the golf course?
No, there's no, this whole manual is new.
We don't have a policy right now.
We don't have a policy. And I actually don't believe it's common for any golf course to have policy written out like this.
And I know there are no golf courses around that allow walkers on the course at all that are not golfers. It's not something that's done on other courses where they allow pedestrians to walk through the course. My personal opinion is that the golf course is for golfers. We have a trail system in our city that's extensive and very well thought out that runs through the city in a really efficient manner, and I think that's where our pedestrians and bikers need to be, is on the trail system, not on the golf course.
So, thank you. Any second? I agree 100% with that. Mr. Patton, I appreciate you coming and expressing your concerns. You're not the first person that's done that. And it does make a lot of sense. You see that half the time you look out there and say, well, it seems like nobody's there. But you never know who's on the next hole. And my only analogy to that would be, and I did read your email today, I appreciate that. I appreciate your thoughtfulness and your thoughts in that. But it's no different than you talked about a rec center. For instance, it'd be no different than if we did own the city owned a rec center and they had posted hours for the pool to be used. And because you're a resident of the pool, you can walk in there and just jump in that pool anytime you want. It's the same thing, right? So the golf course is no different. I mean, even if we owned a rec center and a pool, you would still have to pay a fee to access it. And it wouldn't be us as residents free use. The golf course is the same way. So, you know, while I appreciate it, the thoughtfulness and the thing, I just think it doesn't make a lot of sense. And, you know, I don't know how many residents golf on the golf course. I happen to. I know a lot of my neighbors do. So I don't know. I don't know what the percentage is. I bet it's probably 50% local residents probably use it, but I don't know if it's that high.
I bet it's 5.
No, I disagree with that.
I bet you're in the middle.
I bet you're in the middle. It increases every resident play, increases our facility every year.
And the good news is, the revenues on the golf course have increased per year, so thank you, Woody and staff.
I think Sir Goodwin has some numbers.
Yeah, while the golf course is not self-sufficient, I'm not going to stand here and say that it is a cash cow for the city still, this is really what I'm saying. But I just checked some quick financials. In 2010, we had a budget of revenue on the golf course of $558,899. In 2013, it was $698,585. 2015, it was $749,633. In 2017, it was $778,245. So while I would say that overall golf as a sport is on a slow decline, our staff has done a really incredible job of soliciting play and getting tournaments here and getting people to be here on the course. And so I think it's a testament to the work that they do. If you drive by the course, you'll see the maintenance of it is really well done. It looks really fantastic. And I think that's a kudos to Brian and his crew. Wade has done a great job of getting tournaments and getting play here, and Greg has managed this facility very well. So I think that's really a testament to the work that they do. Additionally, there was a question about the ability to subdivide and break up the golf course. And I would encourage Mr. Patton to go look at the Golf Course Finance Committee report of 2015, because this is an idea that was brought up that was specifically addressed. And I wanted to just read a quick paragraph from a legal memorandum that was provided to the city by Kirk McConkey at the time. Because there, while the golf course sits, it really is the open space dedication for Cedars development, both the Cedars Wagon Wheel, as commonly referred to, and Cedars East and the other side of Canyon Road. They receive clustered density in exchange for this open space dedication that is turned into the golf course. And it's bound by bonding obligations, it's bound by a development agreement as well. And the memo that Kurt McConkey provided states, it says, while it is in nearly all circumstances possible to unwind existing restrictive covenants, cost, both in time and dollars, must factor seriously into whether or not such a conversion of land is wise and or feasible. The nature of the restrictive covenants is such that the ability of the city to unwind various restrictive covenants and contractual obligations would likely significantly increase the city's costs and likely its legal liability exposure. even assuming the city wanted to undertake steps to convert the golf course into something else, the likelihood of litigation will be high and the associated costs unknown. What is certain is that if litigation ensues, the cost of litigation will likely render any such conversion unfeasible from a cost perspective. That was the direction from our attorney, and I think nothing has changed. I know that there's a lot of people that don't golf on a golf course, but they still value the open space, value the green area as an integral part of the community. But anyway, I'm digressing from the topic at hand quite a bit, so I apologize.
I do want to add to your point, though, that the city was notified by the HOA that if we did go back on a development agreement and build on that open space, they would sue the city for violating the development agreement.
And it's not just our open space. In fact, the bottom nine holes down here are actually in Highland, and it's the open space dedication for the subdivision that's just down here right next to the golf course. So it's not just this subdivision, it's also another subdivision likely ensuing to some sort of litigation.
Member Miller, Ellsworth, any thoughts that you have on the policy?
We talk about the trails that people use, we're talking about the cart paths, right?
Yes.
My only thought on this is I would love to see more of the biking and walking trails at some point on the east side of Canyon Road, and I know that's not going to happen anytime soon, but I agree that it's a beautiful place to run, so if that could be put in the roadmap somewhere down the line, that'd be fantastic. But other than that, running on the course using the cart paths for running and jogging doesn't make any sense to me.
I'll reflect that as sentiments of the council. I mean, it'd be nice to use things for the community as we see fit or fits within, you know, our lifestyle or where we live. You know, I know there's a lot of people that right next to the golf course. Much more convenient to walk out their door and walk on those trails than just drive into Murdoch Canal or something like that. With the other trails in our community. But at the same time, it's not a park, it's being run as a business, it's what we have. And the city is responsible for what happens there.
So this is a discussion item, but based on the feedback that I believe I'm hearing from everyone on the council is to move forward with a policy that does not allow for pedestrian use of the cart paths. And one of the things, as we've talked about this, that I've asked staff and they were willing to do was if there are people who are walking on it, maybe get some feedback from them as to what is it about the cart paths that is better than the trail that's around the golf course? So as we're planning for additional trails, if it's steepness, if it's something that they feel like they're not getting in our trail system, we can look at incorporating those as we expand our trail system. And Mr. Pat, maybe you can email me. I think public comment is over, but if you can email me some thoughts as to what it is about the golf course paths that you feel our trail system is missing, that would be helpful. I know we've heard comment from somebody, another resident who provided some insight, but I think that would be helpful as well to expand.
And I would just like to say to our staff and everything, I don't know, I've never confronted anybody, even though I've seen them a few times, I've felt like not been my place to confront them. But I just think we should be cordial and respectful and just say the rule is a rule and just, you know, let's not get confrontational and just state the rules. I don't know if that's, I'm sure that's probably how it's been most of the time.
We try to educate before.
Yeah,
we
I mean,
we don't try to aggravate anybody.
Over and over again, then yeah. I understand. I mean, we're not calling the cops on the first time somebody's walking down the path. You know?
We are fair and consistent with everybody we talk to about it. We try to educate first. We've never, I can say for me, piece that I've seen, no one on our staff is aggressive towards those walkers. Even if aggression comes our way, we do just have to say, hey, well, rules are rules. You can take it up with, you know, our city staff and main office for any questions. But yeah, we try to be very respectful and try to educate as to why most scenarios.
All right, thanks.
And I will say that there's many times I've talked to people and they are very, very nice and very cordial. They honestly have no idea. So it's just a simple conversation and they move on.
It has. I've been here for 5.5 years now. It has gotten better every year just by educating people as to why and the damage that can be caused by walking on, you know, frozen grass or frosty grass. And they understand, and they're most of them. It's gotten better.
Yeah. And I will say as well, most people are they don't know. There's an amount of ignorance that goes along with this. And I'll give you an example. A few weeks ago, Lone Peak cross-country team ran across one of our greens, and their shoes were caked in mud. And they didn't know they weren't supposed to run across the green. It was just ignorance. They just thought, hey, I'm running on soft turf, and they weren't out to hurt anything, damage anything. They just didn't know. Most of the time, walkers are out. It's usually in the morning or in the evenings, where at this time of year or in the fall, we have frost. And people who walk on frost, they have an opportunity to kill the turf. And they just don't know that. And it's ignorance on their part, and they're not out there to damage anything. But as my job as superintendent is to maintain and protect the city's asset and the golf course, and so that's what we're trying to do.
All right, any other thoughts, comments? Okay, that's a discussion item, so there is no vote on that one tonight. So we will move on to item number 9, which is a discussion on the state subdivision, and we want to present to you.
All right, we wanted to have a discussion tonight on the St. Andrews Estate subdivision. This is the plat that the final plat was approved, let's say about 10 years ago, 2007, 2008. This is Canyon Road right here. Mouth of Bay of Canyon is just to the north here, so this is north-south this way. If you drive by, you see holes 11, 12, 13, I believe, right here.
Is that same number?
13, 14, 15, excuse me, yes, so close. So it's the land that's nestled between the golf course that's up on a hill and Canyon Road right here. It's a 22-lot subdivision where the density was approved as part of the development agreement that was mentioned earlier between the city and the Cedars Development. This is land that's owned by the city. Come back here right now. It's usually used right now for staging material. Go there in a few weeks, you might see a lot of asphalt. But yeah, right now that's what it is. It's always been envisioned as a residential property. The city owns that land, and the money from the sale of this land is earmarked for the pay down of the city's golf course debt with the water golf course. However, in years past, there's been a number of discussions that have been generated where there's been interest in possibly commercial aspect at public facilities, such as a park, a pool, or even just leaving it as open space. There's been a number of ideas that have been thrown out as far as the vision of St. Andrews. And I don't know if the City Council, Mayor Reese, you can correct me, I don't believe the City Council ever made a determination ultimately about what they want to see St. Andrews be. So the last time it was really decided upon was when the plat was finally approved. And it's kind of just sat there. The city's never intently tried to sell it, but I feel like if the city wants to see residential development there, it'd be good for the city to put it up on the market and sell it. If they want to see something else there, that's a direction that staff would like to proceed and be that direction and proceed in another direction.
So just to add to that, as Mr. Goodman said, this area was carved out by the council in 2007 because there was a lot of controversy surrounding the golf course, and the intent was, actually it was before the market crash.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, maybe 2004 or 5.
The configuration was in 2005.
Right, so they carved it out with the intent that they would sell these 22 lots and use the proceeds of that sale to pay down the golf course debt. And then right as it was, the golf course was reconfigured to allow for these lots, the market crashed and the land was not worth what it was in 2005. So
things have recovered, obviously, but since then there's been a lot of talk from residents and various elected officials over the last 12 or so years about whether it makes sense to still build homes there, whether it should be open space, the park, all this information. So it's time for us to give some direction to staff. Like I said, if we want to move forward with the residential lots, now's a good time. But if that's not the direction the city wants to go, we need to provide some direction to staff. And this, again, is a discussion item. We're not voting on anything tonight.
What's the total acreage?
The whole plat is, I would say probably, it's about, yes, the whole plat, the non-buildable open space is 24 acres. I would say that the actual buildable area is between 9 and 10 acres.
Okay, but the background sheet says 5 acres, so that's not a small.
Okay.
So, but even still, I mean, looking at the plat, the lots are larger than what we have in that area of the city.
The smaller lot right here, it's hard to read, but that is a quarter acre lot right there. You know, up to, this one is 0.8, almost 0.9 acre. I'll be honest though, I do not love the layout of this. As you're driving, you've seen some of these people come down Canyon Road. This just seems like a accident.
I'm not sure you could actually prove that.
I really don't love this whole set right here. So I would, if the city were to look at selling this, I would ask that it be for that reason.
So my position has been pretty clear recently, I mean, for the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, I'm a developer, I'm a builder. I don't want to see this house. I don't think it makes sense there. I'd like to see it as continued open space. I'd like to maybe keep it for a future rec center somewhere, pool, if we ever agree to that in the city. I think it's a great place for that. Dog park, I really love the idea of the winter sledding facility, winter facility there. There's just so many things that doesn't need to be residence, in my opinion.
I agree with Mike, with the concept. Yes. I think, you know, if we develop this, it's kind of a tough spot, and obviously that layout doesn't work great, but you know, half the lots come in back up to Canyon Road. And I know that the Cedars East, those that back up to Canyon Road, they're not in love with the sound. And some of them express regret for actually moving on those homes. You know, once we give up all this space, we never get it back. Doesn't mean that it can't serve a purpose. I'd like to see it function as something. In the winter, I think if the city can work out liability issues, I think that a sledding park would be very well used, for sure. I know that we move people along there anyway, on the golf course. You know, a dog park would be great. I don't know how, what the frequency of golf balls being hit on those other holes are cutting out the way it is.
It's pretty inevitable.
Yeah. You're driving from north to south, and if you're like me, you have a slice to the right.
Yep.
The home 7 through the tee off 15, 16, you gotta watch out.
The tee off you're talking about right here, hitting or it's gonna slice to the right is further down, it's probably about 4 houses. You're gonna hit the last 4 or 5 houses.
These guys are gonna
get hit, and then the big ones possibly get hit.
Yeah, that would have to be a really rough shot.
Really rough pull. Handed.
Just to give you some context, our building has been hit on multiple occasions because of growth, so that shot is possible.
It is possible.
It's
really.
Oh, this is, oh yeah, this is dropping 2 minutes here.
Within 2 weeks.
2 minutes, we done.
So don't discount that shot. They're very possible.
And if that's the case, the thought of a sledding hill maybe going north to south intrigues me, because there aren't any golf balls. But in the summertime, if you have a park there, even a dog park, and there's a risk that golf balls are going to be flying down on people, that's scary.
No, but I think there are some areas in that not the furthest north would be very unlikely.
That whole, those last with a cul-de-sac back, that's cul-de-sac. That would be a very good location for it.
Yeah. It'd be good for a dog park because it's pretty far removed from any of the existing homes, noise-wise. If you know that the dog park will be used, and if it's out of the range of the golf balls, as long as there's the golf course above there, we're pretty limited.
I agree. If you look behind you, you can see the net that we put up to safeguard cottonwood and golf balls behind you. We had it, what was it, 10, 15 feet to those nets the last few years?
20 feet,
yeah. Golf balls still fly over those. I guarantee you that if this subdivision were to go in, there would be many requests for large nets along here, which any profit that you made from the sale of the land would be needed to.
Which would not even work with looking down.
They'd have to be really high.
Yeah, I think that would work.
And they wouldn't stop every call, just like these ones would stop every call.
I'd like to see that. I can have on the Google map in relation to where the holes actually are.
I can put that out and send that out to the end.
Be interesting because it also looks to me that the top doesn't quite follow Kenny Road. It looks like it counts with that berm. It goes along there. So it's not quite as
keen. I'm always impressed that
you've seen this. Yeah, they have the birds that are next to houses.
To give you some context, on the previous item, there's a number of maps that were provided.
Yeah, goes,
you can go to the third map.
12 through 15.
Go for 15. You kind of get a visual of where St. Andrews fits in there. It's not exact. I can still send out the where
exactly. I'd love to see this where this is exactly flattened out on that.
It gives you a good idea.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that out today. The best I could figure out is those last 4 or 5 houses are at risk. South end there. I wouldn't mind seeing this split up a little bit. I want to see where this lays out so that we can get a better idea where the golf balls are going. I'd love to see a park on the north end, maybe a few houses on the south end, but there's some more information on the back of the park.
Any other direction or questions that you want staff to research?
If we, as Councilman Geddes stated, if we were to consider some sort of city recreational, additional city recreational facility there, that we could work on that with them, but you have to have a parking lot. Cars are going to be down there.
We have a really good parking lot almost there. The staging area, the public works uses, it's really a pretty good area. Anyway, that's my thoughts.
Yeah, I agree. I hate to lose the open space for county development. And I think we can find some great use for that. And I love the idea of dog park. People are clamoring for a dog park. I don't think we necessarily want to put one in Harvey Park. That's the greatest idea, but this is a good location for one. And I love this letting come idea. And I think that we do a lot of mixed use open space in this area.
And maybe the north end could ultimately be commercial. Who knows? I just don't think we need to make a decision. I don't think our residents are clamoring to lower our lots right now.
No.
And it's not the public clamoring that it was in 2004 or 5.
It's cyclical, so I imagine it'll come back at some point, but right now it's not.
Yeah. So my next question for the council would be then, right now it is zoned as residential.
Right.
Are you interested in going through a hearing process to rezone as public facilities? You just want to leave it alone?
There's no action. Who would somebody go to find out about this if they wanted to buy
it?
People would come to city manager probably and say, what do you have? What do you have in the city?
That's exactly how we'll go down. They'll call and see what kind of land you have. And this one, city's 9 acres, comes up. We can put together some ideas and have another discussion in the future. I don't know when it would be in the future, but I don't think it's much of an issue, but we can come back and present some of this. Basically, how a dog park would work, how it would work.
Yeah, then the other thing that kind of pops my mind is how much would the city get for this land? It's not necessarily new land. I could they're kind of looking at it for a lot of us. So I'd be interested to see what the idea was there.
And I would just recommend to the council, if you're interested in keeping it public facilities, if you want it to be open space, it makes sense to get it on the capital improvements plan so the city can start planning for that in the future.
I think, I think preemptively we should present it so that, you know, if it comes up, people want to purchase it. Well, it's not available, it's not the market, but I don't know.
Well, if it's public facility, you can always change it back to
back. I don't believe you lose any development rights that you have. There's a couple legal issues that I'm looking to presenting it, just to make sure that I don't get too far ahead of other issues. I'll just say that.
I think I'd welcome that.
But we can have it. The problem is, this is all, if you look at an area, this is all one parcel. So we have to go out there and have somebody shoot points, basically plot off a parcel that's going to be rezoned. So it's going to isn't hard being a contract somebody to do that. My question is golf course bonding documents, any substantial change in the use of the land could trigger the bonds to be callable. Does using it as open space, does using it as a sledding handle, is that, I doubt it, because you're really not changing the use of the golf course. I just want to do a quick analysis of that and make sure we're not getting too far ahead of ourselves.
All right, thank you very much. And we'll move on to item number 10, which is the discussion on the Lincoln Public Safety District budget. And Mr. Goodman, do you want to start?
Yes, we had a good meeting last Thursday. And I appreciate that Chief Thomas is still in the audience, so any questions, I would welcome him to answer. Mayor Reese was there as well. Chief Thompson presented his preliminary budget, and the Lone Peak Board adopted a version of the budget. Let me give you a little bit of background. When Chief Thompson was hired at the end of last year, I believe all cities were of the understanding that there needed to be some funding changes in how the district operates. I think that much is clear. I think what was not clear was, maybe unclear, was how much. And Chief Thompson has done a good job of evaluating the situation and making a series of proposals to the Lone Peak Board. And in your packet, you have a spreadsheet which is incredibly hard to read. I apologize, it's really small. But it shows three proposals on the very right hand side. Option for staffing one would increase the district's budget, underlying budget, by 14.75%. Did I correct you?
Yes.
Option number two would increase it by 13.5%, and option number three would increase it by 7.19%. The biggest changes in these would be on staffing levels that each city receives throughout the district. Your staffing level is very determined on what your level of service is. So questions on that I would defer to the chief. So the board approved option three. I believe that each city met with the chief. Option three.
It was a staffing option, though. It was just the finance.
Sorry. No, you're right. I misspoke. It is just the option number three that the chief presented, a 7.19%. I believe that what this represents for the city is about $70,000 increase in the finance. The mayor and I sat down with the chief and we expressed our concerns about the fact that Cedar Hills, as a city, we're not growing. We're just about built out. There's a few projects out there to be done, but we're near built out. We can anticipate what our ERU count, our public residential unit count is. With that being said, in this next budget year for FY19, we're anticipating around $100,000 of new revenue in the general fund. Well, a $70,000 increase in the fire budget chews up a lot of that.
And we pledged you for that, but we understand this is not the only issue facing our city. It's a big issue, but it's not the only issue. So while public safety is a very big concern, we do have other sort of concerns in the city that need to be addressed. So with that, what questions can I answer?
I'm going to chime in a little bit. So on option three, that's the board preliminary approved an increase of 7.19%. But the option that was provided, that was a staffing option where it would be staffed, if I remember correctly, 3-2-2.
So the correct, that would be staffed at 3-3-3. With the situation that if we have anybody that calls off for a vacation, holiday, or sick leave, then that we just look at that remaining on staff. So we would look at a 3-3-2 model, eight total on duty that day instead of nine. So okay. Our staffing number is reduced.
So we had talked about different staffing options, though, where there could be different levels. And one of the things that the board was clear on is that while we were approving the reduced 7.19%, they really wanted to keep staffing levels at the 3-3-3 if possible, and look as close to it. So looked at, instead of reducing staffing levels, maybe cutting out some capital projects or other things at this time. And of course, Chief Thompson now has to go back with what was approved and figure out what that will cover and what that will look like. But as Mr. Goodwin mentioned, we generally, most of you know this, we generally have anticipated a 3% increase for fire every year. That's what we budgeted for when we gone through our preliminary budget process. And I did not sign the board, so I'm not sure all the reasons why, but that was rejected year after year, and the budget increase was 1% or lower at times. In any case, we knew this year, going into the budget season, that we needed to budget more than 3%. We figured we were probably going to be doubling at around 6-7%. And that's when Charles presented to us in our general fund presentation. He was budgeting, I believe, a 7% increase. And so what was approved by the board is still about, say, $3,000 or $4,000 more than what Charles even budgeted for. So we feel like we can probably make that work, but as Chandler mentioned, that's using 72% of what we're expecting to come in and increase revenue anyway. And we also know as a board that this isn't, it's not just gonna be a one-time thing this year. This is gonna be year after year after year for a period of time until everything that Chief Thompson feels needs to be addressed is addressed. And so that's one of the concerns that I have is how we financially make this work. We do charge our residents right now, a paramedic fee is $5.95 a month per household per month. We're increasing that to $6 this year to bring in a little bit more revenue. But we're already using various resources to pay for our public safety needs, and it's getting harder to figure out how we're gonna fund that. So one of the things we're looking at as we go out to bid, is, you know, what options do we have available, but we don't want to impact our service greatly as well. And so it may be that once we go out to bid and we see what all of our options are, that we have to have a really hard discussion with our residents about how we're going to pay for public safety needs, whether that's increasing fees or increasing taxes. I don't know the answer to that yet, but I want the council to be aware that what the board approved was a little bit more than what we were expecting anyway, or budgeted for, and that will continue on for a while year after year.
So I 100% agree with you on public safety is really our number one.
It is our
responsibility here. Yeah. And so I support Thompson. And I know he didn't get everything he wanted, but there's a lot of things that he did get. Why didn't get it, but we've got to do something than what we've done in the past, because I was on the board either back in the day, but I know there were some 0% increases over the years, and you know, a lot of stuff just got kicked down the road. And I always feel like the residents, it's always a hard pill to swallow to raise any kind of fee or rate or whatever, but it's probably time to start talking to our residents about increasing that fire fee a little bit. We've got to cover it somewhere. And the residents are the ones that benefit from the safety that multi-fire provides. So I don't think it's that difficult of an issue to be discussed in the next few months.
If I can add something to that, about 70-75% of the calls that come in throughout the district, especially in Cedar Hills, they're EMS and medical related. Yeah. You know, so on a fire, we had a fire a couple weeks ago. You can have a couple minutes to respond, but an EMS and it's a heart attack, which are very common, and we got a hotspot map where the highest responses are, the most frequent response areas are. And our senior living facilities are up there in the district, where the highest response won't be frequently response to. In those instances, you have to respond very quickly. So we do want people within the city, we do want people being able to respond on these critical incidents within just a few minutes of time. So it's critical that there be people that we're not really saying, okay, well, we're going to sit in our station, we're going to make it dark, and we're going to rely on a response from Alpine or Highland or Mutual Aid in some way. I feel like that would be very responsible to the citizens. We want to make sure that we're getting the relevant service that we need for our residents to be the majority of our calls. And that is 80% of our calls are EMS medical related. The board has on a number of occasions approved 0% increase. But the problem with the 0% increase is that there are certain costs that are beyond our control. The health plan, for example. If your health plan goes up 8 to 10%, well, if you have a 0% budget increase, well, your health plan just went up, so you're making cuts in some other areas. So even at 0%, you're decreasing your level of service. And that's why I feel like Mike's analogy of kicking the can down the road is apt. We're to the point where we have to start picking that can up and making really tough decisions. So I thank the chief for putting the time to put this decision, put this budget together. I know it's a hard pill to swallow for the whole board, for the whole district. But it's kind of a wake-up call, really.
So, we were supposed to have a joint meeting in 2 days. I emailed you all that's been postponed. One of the things I would really like to talk to the other cities about, as I've looked at the budget, as I've looked at some of the administrative issues that exist, to me, the thing that makes the most sense for Lone Peak Fire moving forward is to separate itself from the cities and become its own taxing entity, where then the fire district is the one who goes up to residents and justifies whatever cost increase that they need, and you're not competing for other city resources. I mean, where we're having to determine what can we fund. Can we fund roads or can we fund fire? Can we fund, are the public works projects, or are we going to fund this? It's challenging. I've seen that for those three cities, it's challenging to figure out if I'm going to approve this and I can't raise taxes right now, what am I going to cut? And so if we were able to separate it, which some other fire departments have done from the cities and allow it to be its own taxing entity, then it's not, you're not constantly fighting for city resources. And ours is a unique situation where you've got three different cities with three different challenges, so three different opportunities. We're not growing, Highland is. It's really hard. It's really hard to get the three cities to figure out what can work as a district when all three are facing various challenges. So that would be my recommendation to the other two cities, as well as that we get serious about looking at it as a potential option for financing or for funding in the future.
So in the short term, before anything like that gets kicked in, we looked at the idea of, since we know these rates increase, increasing our fee at a set rate over time. If we're budgeting 3%, why aren't we increasing our fee 3% every year?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I think you can do that, but we have to be very selective on how we affect people's utility bills and requirements. We have a growing call study that showed rate increases in certain public works projects, sewer, water, and PI. So you'll see projected rate increases in that. If you get too far beyond that, you start getting angry residents. So we try to absorb as much change into the budget as we've been able to. In fact, there's been even instances where the sewer district, they've raised rates and the city said, okay, well, we can absorb this year. We really try to minimize the impact on the residents as much as we can and tighten our own belts, so to speak. But we're not.
But what happens when we get to the point where we can't tighten anymore?
We're getting there.
It should be understood with residents that if you've got the service that we're providing, it's, I think it's understood that wages go up, costs go up, everything goes up. Minimum increase annually, whatever it is, whatever we need to be minimal impact, I think it makes sense at some level, 1%, 2%, or half a percent, I don't know.
And I will tell you, I think one of the questions that may come up if we go that route is right now, Highland does not assess fee, and I think applicants is $1, or they don't at all. It's $1.
$1.
So we're already in the district charging our residents more than the other two cities.
But they get that elsewhere, though. They get it by elsewhere, for sure.
Right, well, I mean, their property tax.
Yeah, somehow.
Or their sales tax.
But you're right. We are getting to the point where we have to have that conversation of long-term, where our growth is limited. We have to find either new sources of revenue, which as a municipality, there's only so many areas we can go. So, I mean, for example, Colleen came up with the idea of doing passports, which has been a great thing. However, you know, and it's a service residents that they actually want. They come in, they're excited for it, but we're very limited in new streams of revenue. So we have to be very conscientious of how we're using the money we're getting and what those increases are. But I agree with Gary, to the point where we need to discuss how we fund this.
And to be fair, too, some other cities are dealing with when they implement a fee, there a referendum is coming up, I believe. There's a referendum in Highland on their road fee. Did that not happen? I
don't think it happened this time. Okay. But it did happen the previous
time. It did happen the previous time. So residents who don't want to do those fees, they're already doing their referendum. If we increase taxes, if they do go through that truth and taxation, it can be a struggle. That's where it's on us as a council to really provide a lot of education to the challenges that we're facing. And what to expect moving forward as far as increasing the public safety costs and how we're going to pay for it. And so again, I think that first starts with the RFP that we're sending out is showing residents, here are the options available to us. You know, what level of service do you want? And this is what it costs, and what are you willing to pay for it?
And as a side note, the RFP is going out this week. So we expect bids for proposals for working on the public. We expect them in the next 2 months. Hopefully by the middle of June we have starting discussions, some actual bids for actual numbers.
Any other questions? Any questions for Chief Thompson while he's here?
Mayor, can I just add a comment?
Absolutely.
Mayor, you had the opportunity here to come up the longer version of this, but I'll be real brief here. As I looked at, as I was casting, looking at the budget, where we currently sit and where we need to be, keep in mind that the items proposed are dealt with in a three-tiered manner. Regulatory compliance issues, things that we are required to do by law, the industry standard or best practices, and then some of the third tier items have to do with, it helps with recruitment, retention, some of those items like that. Very little of what you see in the increase has anything to do with the third tier there. It's the meat of it is in regulatory compliance that we're not currently meeting, or industry standard that we're not compliant with. And so as we look at, or as you look at where you go moving forward, I would encourage you to understand that, as the mayor mentioned previously, this is a measure to hopefully get us moving in the right direction, but it doesn't get us where we need it entirely to be. There was one item that I found, and this is, I guess, good news as it relates to the bottom line, but there wasn't a $25,000 error in the reduced cost column, so the one that was never red or pinkish color there. So that if we were able to reduce operations, operational increases that were originally proposed, that new number is 50,680. So as we look at that, and if you're referring to staffing option 3 with the reduction there, the new number total increase would be 216,057.76, which is just slightly over 7%, 7.2%. So I just would emphasize,
being as lean as I possibly can be and still make sure that we're providing safety to the people that work here. When we look at whether it's air pack compliance or hose compliance or ladder testing, things of those nature, that is the tools that they use to ensure safety of themselves and others when they are encountering those issues. And if we don't deal with those appropriately, then we're just setting ourselves up for a major issue should we have a failure in that respect. And that's not to say that can't happen even if we are meeting compliance issues there, but it's a best practice or a regulatory issue to ensure that we're keeping safe.
So a quick question for you. Looking at what you've got in the budget for, first year things, regulatory compliance is basically what we're focused on, the preliminary group, is that correct?
That was a staffing option, but basically what we approved was that 7.9%, and Chief Thompson will go back and figure out where he's going to put that.
So, and then based on that, the staffing increase is about, it's roughly $35,000 total, so it's absorbing essentially our money. We have a net decrease because of some reallocation of positions, which I did when I first arrived. And that in total is absorbing any market adjustment or increase associated with healthcare and other benefits. And so really we're at net zero on, with the exception of the increase that we told we're looking at for healthcare costs on the staffing budget. And then the major decrease that you're looking at is what you look at the 970 amount, which is what we proposed for an operations increase or operations budget total versus 869, so 100,000 or 50,000 baseline. How deep you want me to go into the regulatory compliance issues?
Yeah, I'm just curious because I know the way things go is often best practices get rolled into regulatory compliance. So looking down the road, you know, how do you look at this going? Is it going to be like 7% every year that you're going to need an increase, or you know, what's the roadmap? I know these things change.
So again, coming into this late in the game, I guess as far as this budget cycle or looking forward, I think that I had the opportunity to get my arms around this in August or September of the last calendar year. We might be having a different discussion on what the 5-year plan looks like or something to that effect. My goal would be for this year is to let's address the current year and what we can do at this point. And by August or September of this year, I'll have a 5-year plan in place. And what does the forecast look like? And what does that mean planning ahead so that the three cities can address, okay, if we do need to charge a fee or we do need to look at a tax increase, what does that look like? And we aren't just throwing a dart at the wall.
We're saying that's kind of what I'm getting at. Where is this going? So,
right.
So and make a decision that won't scare people.
So my goal with that would be to look at our apparatus replacement policy or timetables associated with that. What our staffing levels should be going, I guess, year 2 through 5. What our regulatory compliance gaps are getting to that point, and what we chip away at it, and how we prioritize those moving forward, so that you can make the best decision possible. Thank you.
Chief, I just want to emphasize, I've been asked this question by people who are curious as to why we are going out to bid, and I just want to make sure everyone knows it's nothing to do with the quality of service that we receive from anybody who is employed by Lone Peak Fire. We love the relationship and everyone who works there has been great to work with. It is really just, it was an opportunity for us to, again, have a conversation with residents by saying, we're looking at all of our options. Here's what we can do. And then have it, that discussion as a community, what makes sense for us moving forward.
I understand it, and as you receive that information, if you have questions or anything related to, I guess if there's a difference in the comparison of numbers, I would be happy to answer any question related to what we can provide or what we should provide.
Thank you. Any other questions for Chief Thompson?
Can I add one thing?
Yes.
I would extend your statement to add American Fork Police Department.
Well, I was talking to
you about
the fire budget, but yes, we agree. I was talking specifically about fire, but no, we've had a wonderful relationship with both entities. Going out to bid was not because of us being frustrated or unsatisfied with service from either entity. It was just again, having a discussion of, we know these costs are increasing, here's our options. Residents, what are you willing to pay for, and what level of service do you expect? So.
I would just encourage as you receive those proposals that you compare truly what that an athlete is an athlete.
Yes.
That's all right.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. That was the last thing on the agenda, so I will take a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
I have a motion by Councilman Geddes. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Ellsworth. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.